I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Early this morning, President Trump and the First Lady revealed that they had tested positive for coronavirus. This was hours after Hope Hicks, a close advisor to the president, tested positive and had begun experiencing symptoms of COVID-19 on Wednesday. Trump tweeted that he and his wife would begin quarantining immediately. For months, Trump has minimized the seriousness and threat of the virus, has belittled mask wearing, has promoted bogus cures, and told a crowd of supporters last night that the end of the pandemic is in sight. This is a fast-evolving story with huge political and health ramifications. We begin with Zeke Emanuel. He's a physician, vice provost of global initiatives at the University of Pennsylvania. His most recent book is Which Country Has the World's Best Healthcare? And he's a former Obama White House health policy advisor. Zeke Emanuel, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be with you again.
Again, exactly.
Under very stressful circumstances.
Indeed. It's one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you, and we've got a lot to cover. Let me just ask you, though, and I was trying to figure out sort of where to begin this interview. Is this what happens when you do not follow public health guidelines?
Unfortunately, it is. We know that the virus gets transmitted under increased risk of transmission under four circumstances: indoors with large groups of people for a prolonged period of time, when you have forced exhalations like singing or yelling or cheering or coughing or sneezing, and we know what can prevent or reduce the risk of transmission: staying 6 feet away from other people, wearing a mask, doing hand hygiene. And the president has clearly ignored all the public health measures except hand hygiene, which he does very scrupulously. But he's mocked people who wear masks. He mocked Joe Biden during the debate about wearing masks. And it just increases your risk dramatically if you don't adhere to these public health measures. And the president has demonstrated that, you know, sometimes those risks actually become reality.
Well, let me ask you about some of the risks. And we know that something like 80% of the people who have died from COVID-19 are over 65. The president is in his 70s. He is obese. How much at risk do you think he is? And obviously, this virus runs a different course depending on a lot of different aspects, I guess, of this pandemic. But do you see him at risk?
Oh, he's definitely at increased risk. The first thing we should say is we don't know a lot about the president's medical background. He's the president who's released the least amount of data about his health. As has been commented extensively, this is the least transparent White House about personal effects, whether it's taxes or personal health measures of the president. We still don't know why he was rushed to Walter Reed on a Saturday 10 months ago, for example. We do know several things. First of all, he is old at 74. That puts him at increased risk. Roughly 11.6% of people who get infected with coronavirus at that age die. Yes. In addition, people who are obese are at much higher risk. He's a man who's just on the border with a BMI ranging, depending upon his exact weight, between 29 and a half and 30 and a half. So, and the border of obese is 30. So he's, he's borderline obese. We also know that he has had high cholesterol in the past. Having high cholesterol might suggest cardiovascular disease. We don't know the bottom of that, which also increases your risk. He's supposed to have metabolic syndrome, which is a precursor to type 2 diabetes, and diabetes increases your risk. So, whatever it is, we have a president who is at elevated risk. Some experts say it's 5 to 8% elevated risk. Others say it's 11% or more elevated risk. But having the world leader with a 5 to 11% risk of dying in the next month, that is serious problem.
Indeed, it is. Well, let me ask you about, because my understanding is that if you went to the White House to have a meeting with the president or to work there with the president, that you were tested. Now, we're learning that Hope Hicks was tested, I think, negative earlier in the week and then tested positive. My understanding is this happens every day. What do we need to know about her? I mean, is she the index patient?
We don't know that. It could be that there's some we don't know that. There could be some common person that Hope Hicks and the president were exposed to who is actually positive, and that person very well might have been asymptomatic. We just cannot know that at this point. The contact tracing to be conducted will hopefully clarify that. But, you know, we do know that once you develop symptoms, you've already been infectious for up to 48 hours before that. So if Hope Hicks developed symptoms on Wednesday, you know, you got to go back to Monday when she was probably spreading the virus around. There are recent reports, unconfirmed, that the president was symptomatic. He was tired. He apparently fell asleep on Air Force One coming back from Minnesota. Fatigue is one of those cardinal symptoms of COVID, along with shortness of breath, fever, loss of smell and taste. So you have to worry that, you know, beginning Monday, maybe Sunday, Hope Hicks and he could have been infectious to other people. And again, we know that they were not wearing a mask, not wearing, keeping 6 feet social distance. And so the circle that needs to be traced back, that should be self-quarantining at this minute. If you were in contact with the president from Sunday on, I think you should be self-quarantining and get yourself a test.
And we're talking about, there was a fundraiser, I believe, yesterday in New Jersey. I heard Chris Christie this morning saying, and he was prepping the president, I believe, along with Rudy Giuliani for the debate, and no one was wearing a mask. That was according to Chris Christie.
Yeah, not very good. And you have older men, Chris Christie and Rudy Giuliani. You have men who are also on the borderline of obesity. I don't know their exact height and their exact weight, but they're certainly not skinny. That's worrisome. And this is, you know, if anything will convince you that wearing a mask is important, this has to be it. No one has had more people around him tested, more precautions in terms of testing taken than the president, and yet he got infected, indicating that testing is a good to know who's got it, but it's not good at reducing your risk of transmission because, you know, if someone is asymptomatic and before they test positive, they're still infectious, you can get it. And so, you know, we can't rely on testing alone. It's absolutely critical for a public health response, but it's not sufficient.
Well, let me ask you about testing, and I'm not sure what particular tests they use at the White House, but how much of a problem are either false negatives, false positives? Just how accurate is the testing today?
We'll all become sophisticated in the false negatives, false positives.
Well, exactly.
So,
but you're the guy to ask, Zeke. Go ahead.
Well, you know, just remember the case of Governor DeWine of Ohio. He tested positive on a rapid test, and everyone was, you know, concerned because he actually had been adhering to the public health measures. And then a more accurate PCR test, the gold standard, was used, and he came out negative. So you're absolutely right. There are lots of false positives, and especially with they're more prevalent with the rapid tests. Let me say there are also more false positives if you're testing a population that has a low frequency of COVID. You're going to get more false positives also, and that is an additional concern. So if you're seeing lots or very few people who are positive, which is the nature of the presidency, you're going to have some false positive. I don't think these are going to be false positive cases for a variety of reasons. They're demonstrating some symptoms. But I do think we're all worried about the false positive situation.
Zeke, a couple of comments that have already come in, and they're all pretty much the same. A number of people think that the president is lying about this, that this is not a true story, a hoax, the way people have said that the virus is a hoax, which, of course, is not true. But what do you think that tells us then about just the mood of the country and our willingness to either accept or understand what we need to know about this virus?
Well, I don't know who would be perpetrating a hoax, because it's obviously not in the president's interest to perpetrate a hoax. He wants COVID off the agenda. This puts it front and center of the agenda. He doesn't want to be in self-quarantine in the White House for the next 14 days. Yeah, that's going to be what's going to be required here. So I am not sure that who would be perpetrating this hoax at all. So that just doesn't, that just doesn't make sense. I think what this is going to do is going to convince the people who have been claiming that this is a hoax, claiming that the public health measures don't make a difference. If this doesn't convince them, nothing will convince them, and they really are beyond the pale of reasoning with. But I think the majority of people who had been skeptical, this will should end that skepticism pretty quickly and resolutely.
But do you think that the public health message, whether it's coming from Fauci or others, or frankly yourself, that this can kind of break through then this sort of wall of denial that's been out there?
One can only
That's your hope, right?
Yeah, exactly. You've got it. It has to be the hope of the country. We need the public to understand the importance of the public health measures. They don't prevent you absolutely from getting the disease. They do substantially reduce the risk. So wearing a mask, staying 6 feet away from other people, whether they're positive or not, those are and doing hand hygiene, those are absolutely pivotal to a positive response. And we know they make a difference. How do we know they make a difference? Look at all the countries that have implemented them and look at their frequency of spread. It's way down, whether it's Taiwan or South Korea, or even for that matter, Italy and other countries in Europe. So we know it makes a difference. There's overwhelming scientific data. Now you have to go from the evidence to convincing the public and the psychological difference. And for those supporters who have been skeptical, those supporters of the president who have been skeptical, this has to convince them. If the president himself admits he's COVID positive, it's no hoax, and B, it's a serious, serious problem that everyone has to change their behavior over.
You know what? Let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We're talking about the news that came out early this morning that President Trump and the First Lady revealed that they have tested positive for coronavirus. They are reportedly going to be quarantining in the White House, and we're talking with Zeke Emanuel. He's a physician, vice provost of global initiatives at the University of Pennsylvania, and we're talking about this shocking news, frankly, from a health and public health perspective. And we want to hear from you. Any questions or comments, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Zeke is going to stay with us for about the next 10 minutes or so. Then we'll be switching gears and talking about some of the political implications of this news. So do stay with us. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowain talking with physician Zeke Emanuel about the fact that we learned early this morning that President Trump and the First Lady have tested positive for COVID-19. I read this morning that Vice President Pence was tested, and his results came back negative. Zeke, let me ask you about the debate I don't even know what day it is today, so earlier this week. I'll just put it that way.
Friday.
It is Friday, and I think that was either Tuesday or Wednesday night. But anyway, was that a super spreader event, that debate, even though, clearly there wasn't a packed house by any comparison to, previous debates. But from what you observed, was that a super spreader event?
Unlikely. The president and vice president were 12 feet apart. I will say the most worrisome the two worrisome things about that event were, first, that apparently the president's entourage came in with masks, but then took the masks off, and the Cleveland Clinic staff, who were the health officials at the facility, asked them to put the masks on, and they refused. And that actually, you know, who knows whether Ivanka or Jared, who've been with the president, are positive, but that is worrisome. And it does show you that doctors ought to be controlling the situation and not political appointees pretending that they're doctors. The second thing, I think, which it perplexed me the night of the debate, I was watching the debate with my partner, and I said to her, I said, why aren't they in plexiglass boxes, at least a plexiglass panel between? And, you know, I can't explain that, because that does seem to me to be something you do. I know that TV productions and opera productions that have been going on, they have put people in plexiglass boxes, or they put plexiglass panels between people to, again, reduce the likelihood of airborne particles going between. And they didn't have the stage properly set, which brings us to the next debate in Salt Lake City. Probably should be virtual. If it's going to happen in person, they ought to be in plexiglass boxes, not in not where they can, you know, aerosolize to a large room. That was a mistake. And I don't know which physicians advised the presidential debate group, but they didn't take all the precautions.
Well, and it was co-sponsored, or at least in part, by the Cleveland Clinic. I'm not pointing fingers. I'm just saying that they, you know, they were.
I just don't know who had control there, but that's a problem.
I mean, you go to any store now, and there are plexiglass, you know, walls between you and the the person at the checkout counter. So interesting. I mean, if you were, I assume Joe Biden, Vice President Biden, will be tested sometime soon.
Tested today, I understand, or I believe he's already been tested. I haven't heard the results. I know that Nancy Pelosi, who's third in line for succession to the presidency, God forbid should anything happen to the president or vice president, has been tested, but still doesn't have her results. So, you know, everyone's going to get tested, and everyone probably needs to be tested again on Monday. I think if Joe Biden tests negative, he goes on the campaign trail and proceeds with. Remember, he's been the guy who's been adhering to all the public health measures, wearing face masks, having his audience wear face masks, having his audience separated, doing hand washing. They've been, I know, very, very careful. I was on their COVID team right at the start of this. They assembled a task force that included me, but many, many other very knowledgeable people, Nancy Katz from Georgetown, Vivek Murthy, David Kessler, Redliner from Irwin Redliner from New York, to advise them on how to close down the campaign facilities, how to proceed, could they do door-to-door canvassing, what should the vice president do. So they've taken this seriously from day one, and they will, I am sure, do their best to protect the candidate.
Well, Zeke, let me ask you about contact tracing. And, of course, this is a very important part of trying to understand the spread of the virus and obviously how to contain it. Are you suggesting, sort of based on what we know today, that you go back to, what, Monday? And then this becomes really exponential because of just the crowds. There was a fundraiser yesterday. There was the rally. There was the debate. There's the flying around, you know, in Air Force One. There are people coming to the White House, including the Supreme Court nominee, I believe, was at the White House as well. So how far afield do you have to go in order to understand who contacted who?
Well, I think we're going to empower you to do the contact tracing. Yes, you're exactly right. You do have to do this big circle. People who are positive, who did they have contact with going back, you know, several days? Who did those people have contact with and, God forbid, could have spread it? Those people, anyone who saw the president, certainly from Monday on, maybe even Sunday on, and again, it's partially going to depend on, did the president really have symptoms and when did they start? When was his last negative? Those people should be staying at home. They should be getting tested. They shouldn't be going out and around. That kind of contact tracing, quarantining people until we are sure that they're negative, that is vitally important. That's how you contain an outbreak like this. That's what every public health person would recommend.
Here's a comment from Jordan who says, it seems to me that if Trump beats this virus without a vaccine, he'll use this opportunity to say that the virus really isn't as bad, which is a dangerous message. Zeke, what do you make of that?
I don't think so. he won't say it's not that bad. It'll have disrupted his whole campaigning. It'll have disrupted lots of things. And there are lots of ifs in that statement. We should remember that Boris Johnson ended up in the hospital on a ventilator. It's unpredictable. We still don't know. We have some indications of how people who needs to be hospitalized. Older people need to be hospitalized more. People who have comorbidities that include obesity need to be hospitalized more. I think it's too early to say what the sequence is, and there's no way that a campaign would, do this just as a stunt or just to get a talking point on the off chance that there's no problem. Yes, the odds are for the president that he will not have serious problems, but, they're not so much for the president. As we mentioned at the start, he is at increased risk of dying, 5%, maybe as high as 11 or 12%. That is very high risk for a president, and it is a serious, serious problem.
So clearly, the next couple of days then are going to be really critical when it comes to the president's health.
Oh, undeniable. And we need transparency on, they said the president's doing fine, but they noticed they didn't use this key word, is asymptomatic, suggesting he does have symptoms. Reading pictures from the Soviet Union, it would be nice if they just came out overtly. Well, we've checked the president. He doesn't have a fever. He doesn't have loss of smell or taste. It would be good to go down the checklist and be very, very transparent. And this White House has been anything but transparent, even about this. And they've also been irresponsible, one should say, even bordering on unethical, in that Hope Hicks went up to that fundraiser in New Jersey expressing symptoms. And if, in fact, the president was having symptoms on Wednesday, he did the fundraiser in New Jersey with symptoms without face masks. That is unethical, irresponsible behavior. That is not something that ought to be modeled.
Well, Zeke, we have to leave it there. We called you up really early this morning. Thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times. Really appreciate it.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. That's Zeke Emanuel, and he did join us by Skype. He's a physician, vice provost of global initiatives at the University of Pennsylvania. Well, just to recap here, President Trump and the First Lady have tested positive for coronavirus and are quarantining at the White House. This announcement came on the heels of news that the president's close advisor, Hope Hicks, tested positive for the virus and had begun feeling sick on Wednesday. She reportedly self-quarantined on Air Force One after returning from a rally in Minnesota. We just said goodbye to Dr. Zeke Emanuel about the health implications of this news. Now we want to focus on the political one, since we're in the middle of a contentious presidential campaign. An election today, a day, believe it or not, is almost 4 weeks away. Joining us is Anita Kumar. She is White House correspondent and associate editor at Politico. Anita Kumar, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And also with us is Ron Elving. He's senior editor and correspondent for NPR's Washington Desk. And Ron Elving, thank you for joining us on Radio Times again as well.
Good to be with you.
And to our listeners, as always, you can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Any questions or comments? Ron, let me begin with you on kind of a global question, because the president, when he talks about the virus as part of the campaign, he has downplayed the use of masks. He's belittled his opponent, Joe Biden, for wearing a mask. He's called the virus a hoax. Many of his supporters don't believe it's real and don't believe in masks. And we've seen these rallies where people are all mashed together and certainly feeling at risk for contracting the virus. Now that the president has coronavirus, where does that leave him and his message and his campaign?
It's going to be confusing for many of his supporters. As you say, they have had their doubts. They may not have personally known anyone, no one in their family, no one in their immediate circle of friends and acquaintances who has tested positive or who has shown symptoms. And so for some people, it has been comfortable, I suppose, to imagine that this is not real and that that word hoax might be used for it, at least in terms of the degree to which others have been concerned about it. So it's going to be tough on people such as that, because now the president is taking it in a way he has never taken it seriously before. One assumes he's taking it seriously in a way he never has before. I think a lot of people need to be concerned and careful about the sort of schadenfreude you hear from some people about, well, he had it coming, he deserves this, he de-emphasized it for so long and didn't warn the country of what he knew in February, and all that may be so, but this is still the commander-in-chief, this is still the president of the United States, so there's another kind of confusion here, I think, that at least mixed feelings, if not confusion, that comes over a lot of people who have a different attitude toward Donald Trump than his supporters have.
Well, Anita, let me get you back in on the conversation. And as someone who is, you know, covering the campaign and certainly covers the White House, how are things inside the White House today?
A little chaotic, I would say. I think there were people that were sort of taken by surprise. The word didn't get out. And I'm not just speaking about reporters. I'm talking about staff. You know, things are split between the White House and the campaign. There wasn't a whole lot of communication. A lot of people didn't know sort of about Hope Hicks and what was going on until, you know, they read about it or they saw it or, you know, they saw the president's tweet about his own diagnosis and the first lady. So there's a lot of confusion today. I think that on the campaign side, of course, you know, just practically speaking, they're trying to figure out what's next. You know, he needs to isolate, self-isolate with the first lady. You know, what does that mean for these debates? Is he going to be able to be on the campaign trail at all for the next month? And what does that mean? How do they campaign going forward? You know, on the White House side, they're really just trying to test everyone and contact people and do some contact tracing about who might have been around him and, his age. You've seen people starting to tweet today about if they were around him, you know, if they've tested positive or negative. And I think you just had a doctor on who was saying this, that even if people are testing today, they may not know until next week if they actually are infected. So there's going to be a lot of that going on at the White House for the next few days.
Anita, I mean, I think yesterday, again, I don't know what day it is, but I believe yesterday was Thursday, and even Wednesday. I mean, it's important to know the timeline, sort of what did they know and when did they know it, that particular kind of question. And my understanding is that Bloomberg broke the news about the Hope Hicks story. But when the press secretary had her briefing yesterday at the White House, did she know about Hope Hicks and maybe even the president?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question and one that we're trying to figure out today. We do know that Hope Hicks started, you know, to feel unwell on Wednesday, right? And so she's around a lot of people, not just the president, but she's around others. She's also around the press secretary. So the thought that she doesn't know it, a lot of people are really skeptical. And I think we're really trying to figure out, I won't say, because I don't think we know fully who knew what when, and it sounds like they were trying to keep it very close, but it's very hard to do that when the president is in proximity, you know, and Hope Hicks is in proximity of so many people. You know, they're very much when they travel, and of course he's been traveling nearly every day now because of the campaign, you know, when they travel on Air Force One, the staff is generally not wearing masks, and they're sitting close together. There isn't social distancing on the plane because people are just sitting next to each other. And then, you know, there's just groups of people all over the place. I actually happened to be in the debate room this week, did not travel in Air Force One, but was in the debate room. And I saw, you know, the family and the staff that were there, and they did not wear masks. I think you mentioned that earlier. So, you know, you have to sort of backtrack and look at all the people that the president and first lady were around this week. And it's so, so many people.
Ron, let me go back to you, and I'm not asking this as a partisan question. I'm thinking of my 3-year-old grandson who wears a mask. I just don't understand how wearing a mask has become this partisan issue. and that has divided the country the way it has. Do you understand that?
Only because I've seen it demonstrated and heard so many people express the sense that the mask was in some way or another a ruse, some kind of imposition that was put on regular Americans by some sort of elite. And this is why you had many people turning against Dr. Anthony Fauci, who has always tested enormously high in polls. People have more faith in Anthony Fauci than any other scientist or any other voice on the virus. And that's still true, that he has that standing. But now there is an active group of people. Fox News's Tucker Carlson refers to Lord Fauci. And I think that speaks volumes, because many people feel that there has been something imposed on them, an economic hardship, the shutting down of the economy, many inconveniences in terms of lifestyle, locked up in their houses, in their view, because scientists like Anthony Fauci overestimated how important it was to wear masks, or were themselves self-aggrandizing their own importance by telling everyone to wear masks. So it became a symbol of American individualism, rugged individualism. It became a symbol of American independence, that you did not see yourself threatened and therefore you didn't wear a mask. I'm not sick. I don't need to wear a mask to protect others. I am not afraid of this virus and therefore I'm not wearing a mask. Totally, of course, missing the point that whether you're sick or whether you're going to get sick, what we're trying to do with the masks is flatten the curve by denying the virus hosts, by denying the virus places to go to stay alive and keep infecting more people. That message, that last message, perhaps has not reached many Americans.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That very familiar voice is Ron Elving, a senior editor and correspondent for NPR's Washington Desk. Also with us, Anita Kumar. She's White House correspondent and associate editor at Politico. And we are talking about the political fallout from the news early this morning that the president and the first lady and advisor Hope Hicks have tested positive for COVID-19. And again, you can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio. Oh, I said that. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowain. We're talking about the political fallout from the news earlier this morning that the president and first lady have tested positive for COVID-19. Obviously, we're in the middle of a very contentious presidential campaign. The election is less than 5 weeks away, so there is a lot at stake. Again, talking with Politico's Anita Kumar and NPR's Ron Elving. Anita, let me read this email from Bruce, and I have to say, I just got a note saying that this is very typical of, I think, a lot of the response to this news that we're getting from our listeners. This is from Bruce. He says, many of my peers think it's a strategy to get out of the debate since his performance was so poor in the first one. Another thought it may be a way for him to get out of the election since there is a slight possibility he may not want to be president anymore because he is losing so much money. The idea is that they do not believe that the president, and perhaps even the first lady, but that the president is testing positive for COVID-19. They don't believe it.
You know, it's really interesting. I've been hearing that all morning from, you know, just people all over the place. I guess that's sort of the country and the world we live in these days. I find it hard to believe, considering the president's physician sent out information, right? A physician is not supposed to lie about something like that. But also, I understand what people are saying. But this is going to be a terrible situation for him, for the president, for the next month. So it seemed, both for his campaign, for the White House, for the stock market, for world leaders. I mean, it goes way beyond sort of his personal, situation. And I just, it seems sort of far-fetched that would be the case. I will say, you know, a lot of people criticized him for the debate, what he did about the debate and how he performed. He actually thought he did very well. He personally told people he felt very confident about it, that he wanted to be aggressive, and he was. So while I understand a lot of people have criticized, including some of his own allies and Republicans, he personally didn't feel that way. Perhaps he's seen the negative publicity and thinks otherwise, but initially his thought was that he had done well and things had been going well. He's had to cancel now, you know, he has a ton of events that he's going to have to cancel. So I don't know, but it is an interesting time that we live in that people think that it's not true.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. Ron, let me put that to you. And I just to add to what Anita was saying is, I mean, it's clear that he gets such energy from, you know, being out at a campaign rally with his supporters, you know, cheering him on, and to not have that seems like such a loss for him.
Yes, and he had been missing it through the summer, late spring and early summer. You remember how eager he was to get to Tulsa, but that event was not successful, partially because people might have thought they couldn't get in, and also because some people at least seemed to have some fear of the virus. And so that event was not successful. Since then, they've been having smaller events in airplane hangars and so forth, and those seem to come off well from the standpoint of energizing the president, as you say, and also giving his supporters a chance to show their enthusiasm. They have been coming out. They have not been social distancing. A minor fraction of them are wearing masks, so some people are seeing those as potential outbreak moments, potential hotspots because of those rallies. But the president is clearly energized by them. It is hard to imagine that he wouldn't want to get back out there, as he was planning to do, over the next 2 weeks and have more of those rallies and have another debate or two and you know, just keep the whole thing going full bore as he did 4 years ago when he overcame, at exactly the same stage in the campaign, I might add, just 4 years ago this weekend, the Access Hollywood take that was so embarrassing. And he overcame that largely through his indefatigable energy and storming around the country and showing himself to be still fully confident of his ability to win. That is certainly what he was hoping to do over the next 4 or 5 weeks or the last 4 weeks of the campaign, to overcome what appears to be a pretty steady lead for Joe Biden in the popular vote and possibly also in the Electoral College, judging state by state. So it's hard to believe that they would want to give that up. Yeah. But my students, I teach at American University. I've been meeting, I've had two groups of students so far today, and many of them are expressing this same skepticism that they think that somehow this is a ruse? That seems madness, but that does seem to be out there, a lot of people are talking about it on social media.
Yes, indeed, and here it is. So we have to deal with it. Let me put something else in, Anita. I'll toss this to you. The next debate is the one between the two vice president nominees, Pence and Harris. This is scheduled for Wednesday. Do we know the status of that?
Well, we assume that is happening. You know, the Senator Harris has put out there that she has, you know, tested regularly as her regular protocols and that she's tested negative. The vice president has tested negative as well. And the vice president is obviously keeping away from the president and is trying to figure out now, just according to the campaign, they're trying to figure out exactly what he can do. It would seem that he could go to the debate, but, you know, I'm sure the Commission on Presidential Debates is also considering maybe they should make some changes. You know, I've heard people suggest this morning already, hey, should these go virtual and not be in person in an actual venue? So I think there is some thought going on to that. But as of this moment, it sounds like it is still on.
Here's a comment from Susan, and she wants to know how much will all of the contact tracing due to the president and Melania's positive COVID test cost the U.S. taxpayers. I'm not sure, Ron, you can directly answer that, but I was talking with Zeke Emanuel about just what that would take. And you look at the last, you know, 5 days of the president's activities, and he's been in contact with a lot of people. So that's going to be a heavy lift for somebody and probably costly.
It is entirely possible, and Anita might be in a better position to judge this, but it's entirely possible that the presidential team has been anticipating the possibility that they would have to do contact tracing from the president or from Melania or from his, you know, inner circle of people, Hope Hicks, for example. At any juncture, they must have known that one of those people could suddenly test positive. You don't do tests unless you think there's a chance you're going to find something. So they must have known that one day they could wake up and suddenly want to contact many, many people and do that contact tracing all over the country, possibly even. They must have thought a little bit about this, but the logistics of it, when you think about the rallies and all the people that he sees at these rallies or at least gets within 6 feet of, that would be quite a task. And it's possible they've thought about it, but just thrown up their hands and said, what are we going to do?
Yeah. Anita, I'm just thinking about, frankly, the kind of no good, very bad week that the president has had. You've got these New York Times articles that have been dropping every couple of days about his taxes and his businesses. There was the white supremacy issue that came up at the debate that really hasn't been addressed. The job numbers came out today. They are not particularly good. I mean, it seems as if, and then you add, of course, this coronavirus diagnosis for the president. He's had a really terrible week.
He's had a rough week. I mean, honestly, it's been pretty rough, you know, since coronavirus. It's been rough for a lot of people, not just sure. him. But yeah, I mean, just politically, it's not been a good week for him. You know, I mentioned before that he didn't think he did a bad job at the debate, but there has been an uproar over his comments. He's tried to sort of walk those back. He was on Fox News last night with Sean Hannity, and he did walk those back. He did say he condemns white supremacy, the thing that people have been wanting to hear for 24 hours, 48 hours, really. I just don't think anything is going to matter now. People are going to move on from all those things. This is really upended everything, you know, not just his campaign, but so many different things in the United States and around the world that he has to do as president. So I do think some of those things are not going to matter right now. And this has really changed everything, really.
Well, Ron, let me go back to you. And you have covered other White Houses. I'm not sure exactly how many, but you've been around for a while. And I'm just wondering, there have been certainly the Watergate Nixon crisis, Ronald Reagan getting shot, and he had a diagnosis of cancer. Do I have that right?
Well, he had a procedure 4 years
a procedure.
After he was shot. In 1981, I believe it was something along the lines of a colonoscopy. And there were polyps removed. And those were tested and found to be benign. So I don't think that there was cancer involved, although we do now have some reason to suspect that he was showing symptoms of Alzheimer's, which eventually claimed his life. And he was showing some of those symptoms in the later phases of his second term, possibly even earlier. No one will ever really know for certain, but there were lapses on Reagan's part, including in the first debate of his reelection campaign in 1984. But during those two times when he went under sedation in 1981 and 1985, of course, we went through the usual questions about succession. And in 81, they never transferred power to George H.W. Bush, who was traveling at the time the president was in the operating room. In 1985, they were very cautious, and out of an abundance of caution, they transferred all the president's powers to H.W. Bush for that period of time the president would be under sedation. For that procedure in 1985. But of course, it was a short period of time. Nothing happened. No one talked about it anymore. But those procedures are in place if they should be activated. I don't think we're anywhere near that kind of emergency at this juncture. But you know what you were just saying a moment ago about how everything's been upended by this and how all bets are off for a couple of weeks. This, I think, is what makes some people suspicious. They think, wait a minute, everything's going so badly for the president with his taxes and the debts and the Time stories and now this new tape of Melania saying uncomfortable things and, you know, memories of Access Hollywood and the debate and white supremacy and that long catalog. And then suddenly it's all kind of upended, right? It's all in a cocked hat. And doesn't that set off the suspicions of some people who have their doubts about the president's veracity?
Well, Ron, I know you have to leave us. We're going to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. That's Ron Elving, senior editor and correspondent for NPR's Washington desk. Anita Kumar from Politico, staying with us for the rest of the hour. Let me ask you, Anita. I mean, we hope the president doesn't get seriously ill, but let's say that he does. That puts Pence in charge. And then what? No, he tested negative today, but I'm just trying to speculate here. So what happens if Pence gets sick? What is the chain of command if this virus really wreaks its horrible havoc?
Right. Well, you know, you saw Mark Meadows, the White House chief of staff, just now, talked to reporters who are at the White House saying that the president's, you know, doing okay. And he's still sort of, even though he's isolating or self-isolating, he's still sort of doling out orders to the chief of staff and to others. I'm sure he's been in contact with the vice president. You know, obviously Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, is in that line of succession. If anything were to happen, I believe she said that she has tested. I'm sure that she has probably gotten tests. There are a lot of people that, you know, get tested regularly. So, for example, we talk about the vice president getting tested. He is actually tested daily anyway. Uh-huh. This has nothing to do with this. So there are protocols in place for them to get tested regularly. Joe Biden, Kamala Harris also tested regularly at this point, too. So to catch things like this, the president was tested regularly as well. So the good news is they say, you know, if they're tested so quickly, they'll catch it quickly. Right. But we just don't know how he's feeling and how that's working out. There are some reports that he was starting to feel some mild symptoms yesterday. And yesterday was the day he flew, if you remember, to Bedminster, New Jersey, right. his private club where he had a fundraiser. And there's some people questioning if he was not feeling well, why take that trip? Why do that trip?
Yeah, such a good question. Here's a tweet. Interested in hearing your guest's reaction to the report that GOP chairwoman Ronna McDaniel has also tested positive to COVID after feeling symptomatic and being with the president last Friday. I'm just reading that. I didn't check that tweet. But do you know anything about that, Anita?
She does. I actually was just talking to someone about this at the Republican National Committee because I was a little confused. I had mentioned that I went to the debate, and one of the things I saw before the debate started was names assigned to different chairs, you know, where people were going to sit when they came in. This was before the debate. And there was a chair for Chairman McDaniel, so I thought that she was there, though I never saw her. But an RNC official is telling me that a member of her family tested positive. So she that's why she got tested. On Wednesday afternoon, she got a confirmation that she was positive, but she's been at her home in Michigan since last Saturday. So she apparently hasn't been out all this week, really, unrelated to what has happened at the White House, it seems.
Let me ask you about the White House itself, what it's like inside. I mean, from the outside, it looks like a big, you know, a big house, which clearly it is. But when you're inside, I was reading that the halls are really narrow and the rooms are rather small. Help us understand what it's like inside that building.
Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful building, but inside people, I think, would be shocked, even though some of the rooms are actually very beautiful, and I'm not saying they're not. It's an old building. So you're right. It's narrow halls, it's small spaces, and what people don't understand is there are a lot of people that work in that, you know, the what we call the, you know, the White House complex. They can't even fit in the White House. And so they're next door in another building. It's still considered sort of the, you know, White House staffers, but they're next door because the space is so very small. So, you know, if people are working there, they're sort of sitting next to each other. So obviously some high level people have their own offices, but even the offices are small. So, you know, there's no sort of being by yourself there. You're around people. There's Secret Service, of course. And then, of course, there's the area where the press is working. So the press has really limited itself to coming in. But obviously there are people, a small group of people there every single day. So there, you know, people are very close together. I will say until today, the White House staff, by and large, have not been wearing masks. I noticed today, obviously I'm not there today, but I noticed that a colleague who is there says that the White House staff are wearing masks today. So, you know, it seems like a little bit late. And, you know, there was a time earlier on months ago where White House staff and anyone who came in the White House was told that they had to wear a mask. But I will say that was a long time ago. And they, you know, I've been there lately. They have not been wearing masks.
I read, I think it was in the New York Times, saying that senior officials don't wear a mask in deference to the president.
Yeah, I mean, that could be true. You know, there are some people that feel that they should, and they are, but many of them don't. And some of their reasoning is, beyond what you just said, perhaps, is that they're tested regularly. If you're in close proximity to the president, you're tested. And so their thought is, well, I'm tested. Why do I have to wear a mask? But, you know, I think doctors and public health officials would sort of argue against that.
Well, Anita Kumar, thank you for joining us. We were scrambling this morning. I really appreciate you joining us today, Radio Times.
No problem. Thank you.
You're welcome. And she's White House correspondent and associate editor at Politico. And thank you for joining us. Our producers were scrambling this morning. Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. And Diana Martinez, our engineer. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Thank you for joining us.